Welcome to Loading the Bar with physical training experts Parker McBride and Matt Wasko. Our Fit Lifestyle podcast covers the science of nutrition and fitness, together with the challenges we all face to be disciplined. We'll guide you through the minefields of fads and gimmicks and all manner of BS that tempt us in today's fitness world. Ready to begin? Then let's start loading the bar.
Welcome back, everybody, to the Loading the Bar podcast. Parker McBride here, joined as always by my co-host Matt Wasko. How are you this morning, Matt?
Another day. We had another exciting HIIT class this morning. So, group circuit training. And so it's really starting to take off here. We're starting to see some positives. We got a lot of our past clients. They're slowly trickling in. And so it's an exciting time.
Yeah, it's a lot of fun to kick some people's butts. Nothing I love more than just a really tough HIIT class.
I don't know if we want to say that out loud. Might lose somebody.
people are really tired when they get done. Yeah, right. I love it. Last week we gave our predictions for the Chiefs opener, which took place on Thursday night, and I have to say Matt did not have faith in our Chiefs.
Listen, I'm just trying to be objective. Did I want the Chiefs to win? Yes, I did. But Chiefs have kind of opened slow, and but they came out. This new Worthy kid is probably going to be a game changer. And depending on how Rice turns with his court trial, he may be out of the game depending on that. So, but this Worthy kid, this I think he's a rookie, if I'm not mistaken.
Yes.
Blazing speed. And I can see once he learns how to run his routes a little bit better and get open, getting him in an open field, it's going to be pretty scary.
Absolutely. Just happy to be the only one on this podcast that predicted a Chiefs victory.
Okay. All right. Enough taken. Hey, you know, not that I wanted this to happen, but you saw the last play, right?
Yeah.
Yeah.
The toe on the
white
line.
That was – talk about – I mean, it's nice you come out on the other side of that and win, but talk about exciting ending. Mm-hmm. That was an intense way to go. I mean, throwing the ball with no time on the clock, that's what everyone pays to see.
Yeah, it was definitely close. Could have gone either way.
It could have.
Well, the Chiefs are not back in action until next Sunday, I believe, so maybe we'll hold off to – do our week two prediction till next week's podcast.
Sounds good.
So in that case, we will jump on into our Fit Focus for the week. Have a good study here that Matt sent to me. And it is a 1998 study, and it says, quite simply, melanoma is not caused by sunlight.
And we've talked about this a little bit in the past. And even to this day, I have friends and family, you know, like we went to Arizona recently, and you know, we're going to go ahead. No, the sun's hot there. It was 110. And we're going to go out by the pool, and my wife said, "Oh, we got to put on sunscreen." I said, "No, we're not putting on sunscreen." I was like, "All you need to do is look at the UV rating, and then if it's really at the highest point, which is usually 9 or 10, on the UV scale, then you need to turn over after about 20 minutes or you're going to get sunburned. And then after that, you get in the shade, you know? So that's how you control it. Don't be putting in any of that sunscreen on, because it really doesn't, it actually causes more cancer than the sun.
Yeah. So basically what the study says here is there are three categories or types of skin cancer. There is squamous cell cancer, basal cell cancer, and then there's melanoma.
Right.
And the study, you know, it talks a little bit about the first two types, the squamous cell and the basal cell, and those are still skin cancers, but those are the types that have like a greater than 99% survival rate.
Mm-hmm.
They rarely are an issue.
Right.
And those, the study does say, and it'll give arguments later in the study, but the study does conclude that the sunlight does cause those types of cancers, mm-hmm. but specifically melanoma, which is the deadly type of the three skin cancers, much higher mortality rate. and experiences it in a lot more young people, that one specifically, they're concluding is not caused by sunlight. So we'll dive in a little bit to why that could be the case. And one of the things they start with, they have some different snippets here where they talk about different factors and why they think, why they're concluding melanoma is not purely caused by sunlight. And the first one they talk about is age dependence.
Mm-hmm.
So what they noticed in squamous cell and basal cell carcinoma is those are 450 times more likely to happen in a 75-year-old than a 25-year-old. And what they're concluding from that is that you're more likely to get this cancer as you get into a elderly age, after you've had a lot of years of sun exposure. On the contrary, melanoma is only 5 times more likely to happen at age 75 than 25. So you have a 450-time increase on basal cell, squamous cell. You only have a 5 times increase on melanoma. So melanoma is much, much, much more likely to happen in a young person than basal cell is. And so their argument is that the other two are caused by years and years of sun exposure. And this is just one reason why they think that melanoma is not necessarily linked to sun exposure. What are your thoughts on their age conclusion?
I think it makes sense. But I would, and I don't think this study talks about this, it's saying how sun causes a couple of those types. I'm going to go out on a limb here, we don't have this study in front of us, but I'm going to go out on a limb here and say I'm not so sure the sun actually causes those other two. I think there needs to be some research into what processed foods you're eating during those years, right? Because it's the chemicals that you put in your body that tend to react with the sun. It gets in your skin. And then this is a study I read probably six months ago, where we need to think about the processed foods that we put in our body, and that mixed with the sun is what causes so much skin damage and cancerous response. And so, you know, I know this is just looking at the sun only, but I would be curious, bring in that other study.
Well, this was a 1998 study.
Right, and so this has been a while.
Well, yeah, and it was before we really had this push that we have right now about anti-processed foods and the damage that chemicals and processing and food can have to our body.
Yeah.
And I'm sure if this study was done over again today, they probably would include some of that research.
Yeah.
But, you know, it wasn't really thought about 25 years ago.
Yeah, I don't think everyone had a full understanding what the processed, the people that did understand what processed foods did to the human body were probably the people producing them.
Yeah.
And, but I think the level of education that's taken place over the last, 25, 26 years, since 98. I think that the level of education over the last, 25 years has gone up exponentially as far as people realizing what's happening to their body. And that's because of what? The result. The results have said, why are so many people getting cancer? Why are there so many unhealthy people? You know, we've had such negative results from the processed food that they've finally connected all these negative results. Well, what are these negative results? What's the connection? These people are eating processed foods, right? And so Americans are some of the most unhealthy people on the planet.
It takes time to gather data. Mm-hmm. It's kind of like what we talked about Ozempic a while back, and we had some short-term data, but there's no long-term data yet for 10, 20, 30 years because it hasn't been around that long.
Right.
Right. So, you know, we're getting some of that long-term data built up now on the processed foods because of how long they've been around and how long they've been a regular part of people's diets.
Right.
This is off topic, but I didn't look into it, so don't take this as fact, but I saw somebody said that grocery stores weren't mainstream until like the 1940s. And I thought about that, and I thought, they're like, well, you know, where did food come from before that? Everyone had to raise it on their own properties and then, you know, trade with each other and find your local farmer. You know, if you didn't raise food, you had to just go down the street to one of the local farmers that did and get food. You couldn't go to a grocery store.
Right.
And that's just been within the last 100 years that mm-hmm. those have really popped up and become so mainstream.
Yeah. Yeah. No, it makes sense. I think we think a few podcasts ago we were talking about, you know, grocery stores weren't even possible because you had no refrigeration, you know?
Yeah.
And when that became a tool that you could keep constant, then that's when the possibility of having food in one spot made sense. That's not the right word, but was possible.
Yeah. So they talk about age. Then they also go down and talk about distribution on the body surface. So this one is kind of interesting because their argument is that if skin cancer is due to sunlight, then it's site density on areas of the body more exposed to sunlight should be greater than the areas less exposed to sunlight. So basically what they're saying is if the sun is causing the skin cancer, then the parts of your body that get all the sun would be where the cancer is.
Right.
And while they did find that with basal cell and squamous cell, they said melanoma did not have a high incidence of exposure on high sunlight areas. In fact, they said the feet and even inside of the mouth, but the bottom of the feet, inside of the mouth, on the back, places that are typically not sun exposed frequently,
right,
are the places that it's most common to have melanoma. I mean, how many people sun the bottom of their feet?
Right.
But there was a recent example with, I'm going to forget his name, but it's a YouTube streamer video game guy who was very young, in his 20s. He got melanoma on the bottom of his foot. And it's like, here's a dude, he's young, he sits inside and plays video games all day, and he got skin cancer on the bottom of his foot. How can you make the argument that that came from sunlight exposure?
Right. Yeah. You can't.
No, not when it's in those areas.
Yeah, I think the reality of what sun actually does to the skin, because, I mean, sun's a great place to get some vitamin D, right? And so when people get out in the sun, as long as they're smart as far as, one, stay off processed food, don't sit in the sun until you get a sunburn. That's when you can damage your skin. If you get this sit there until it fries your skin. But just be smart about the sun and understand that there's going to be more and more research that's coming out. But the biggest problem is the lack of education. There's so much going on as far as what's in these sunscreens. And I know that's not part of the study, but my advice, stay off sunscreen. Just be smart how long you stay in the sun and stay off processed foods, and your chances of cancer are mitigated greatly.
So this one's interesting. They found that melanoma had a much higher incidence in people with a higher social class. That's very interesting.
That is interesting.
And the argument that they're making here is that people in a lower social class tend to have jobs and work where they're outside all the time in the hot sun, in the heat. They're getting a lot more sun, and the higher class people are more inside a lot, getting less sun exposure. And so they're saying you would think you would see it a lot more in a lower social class instead of a higher social class.
Right.
But they didn't see that.
Fascinating.
Yeah. And I would say that there's probably some validity to that.
Yeah.
And so now the next thing that they argue is that the incidence of melanoma has increased over the past few years and few decades. And they are saying that we spend more time out in the sun, or we used to spend more time out in the sun than we do now. Right? Back 50 years ago, 100 years ago, people had to work more outside.
Yeah, absolutely.
Than they do now. So many people work inside, behind computers, offices, things. So we're getting less sun exposure now, yet we're having more melanoma.
Yeah.
So that would argue that it's not the sun, it's something else going on.
Kind of like
what you were saying earlier. There's another factor at play there, because if we're out in the sun less, yet we're getting this skin cancer more, something's got to be going on.
Yeah. No, absolutely. I mean, that's, again, you have to start connecting the dots. And, you know, melanoma and skin cancer were not a thing, you know, 150 years ago. It's only been in the last, you know, I'd say 75, 80 years where it's increased to the point that as processed food has become more predominantly what people eat. And I think, you know, the chemicals that we put in our skin, you know, that the kidneys have a trouble filtering out, that's causing a lot of this. And again, you know, this is a 1998 study, so it's not really talking about that, but I'm convinced of that.
Yeah, I've heard some people say this. I haven't maybe like tested it, but I've heard some people say that they don't sunburn when they if they're not eating any seed oils.
Right.
Have you seen that?
Yeah.
They said like they were sunburning pretty easily. They cut out seed oils, and then like a month later or whatever, they no longer are getting sunburns.
It doesn't surprise me. I have not heard that, but seed oils are so bad for you, or so toxic. I you know, it's just like anything. You put something, it's kind of like, you know, the old adage is like, that's why we don't put sand in an engine, right? Doesn't work, right? Mm-hmm. It's going to make the engine run poorly. Or if you put oil instead of gas where the gas is supposed to be, it's not going to work, right? So you start putting things in the body that are not intended to be there, the body's going to respond in ways it's not intended to respond. So you're going to get some negative impacts by, you know, putting those toxins in your body.
Yeah, and I think there's a little bit of logic that has to play into that. Kind of like when we were talking about eggs last week. I asked you about eggs and
right.
The prevalence of people who think that eggs are just the worst thing for them because that's what they've been told. But we, you know, broke it down from a logical perspective. This is a natural food that's always existed. People have ate eggs for thousands of years without any problems. Now all of a sudden there's problems.
Right.
You know. But yet they tell us that these processed foods that have only existed for the last 20 years are really good for you. So I think the same thing comes to sunlight. They want to tell us the sun's the problem, the sun's the reason why we're getting cancer, why we're dying, why we're unhealthy. I mean, the sun, by definition, has existed. The sun existed before humans existed. Right? Sunlight has been around for... Sunlight is how we even have life.
Right.
We can't have life without sunlight. It's been that way forever. There would be a lot of people, most people back, you know, if you go back hundreds, thousands of years ago in human history, people are outside all day getting tons of sun exposure, you know, and we don't have, like I said, we don't have a prevalence of skin cancer from back in those days. It's more of a recent phenomenon. How could you logically make the argument that the sun is bad for you?
Yeah.
That would insinuate that the world was, like, created with stuff that was bad for us.
Right.
Everything that's bad in this world is a result of humans, not a result of God creating the world that way.
Right. The world has a particular way it was intended to function, and when we mess with that, and that includes our bodies, that's when you get all these negative results.
Exactly.
Yeah.
So basically that was, there's a couple more things, but we won't go into them, but that was basically the gist of it, is they're concluding for these logical reasons that melanoma is not caused by sunlight.
Right.
So it's a very interesting conclusion, and I think it's becoming much more apparent to people nowadays. This guy was obviously ahead of the curve back in 1998.
Right.
But I do think this is becoming a much more mainstream opinion nowadays.
Yeah, over time it's gonna, I mean, it's still pretty predominant. I mean, sunscreen is still part of the equation for most people, and but I think, you know, there's I probably 20-25% of the people out there are starting to get it and understand that how the sun's supposed to work and how you're supposed to eat. I mean, think about it. I think the last numbers I saw was that 33% of the population goes to the gym. Okay. So out of the 30, and we still see people that are not educated on nutrition that do come to the gym, right? So, you know, at best, you're probably talking maybe 20, 25% of the population understands nutrition. And again, that's just anecdotal experience. I don't know. I don't have any real numbers on that.
Yeah, it's hard to say.
It is hard to say. Well, you want to get into some of these questions?
Sure. So last week we did a little Q&A where I asked Matt some frequently asked questions that we hear all the time in the gym. And this week we're going to reverse the roles.
Yes, we are.
So Matt's going to ask me some of his frequently heard questions.
Question number one. I'm trying to decide what order to put these. I think I might get into the bottom questions I came up with first. Okay. So here's something I want you to answer. My shoulders always hurt when I do barbell bench. So do I do it?
I would say yes, if we can fix your form. Because okay. Shoulder pain on a bench press, unless you have an actual injury, shoulder pain is usually due to improper form. And so if you can't fix your form, if you're somebody that works out by yourself and you don't have any form coaching, then I would say no, because it's not worth the pain. It's not worth the risk of injury. But if you have the access to a coach or to research some form and fix your form correctly to where the pain goes away, then yes, you want to do barbell bench press. Not that it's a you must, but you can.
Okay.
That would be my answer. Usually what happens when we see pain in the shoulders on a barbell bench press is the shoulders are coming too far forward. They're coming up above the chest, and the shoulder blades are becoming unlocked underneath you on the bench. And the usual fix for that would be to take your shoulder blades, your scapulas, pinch them together, and you want to hold that pinch the entire time during your press. So that keeps your shoulders back, keeps your chest above your shoulders. The tension throughout the movement is going to be in your chest, not in your shoulders, and that should take a lot of that pain and inflammation away.
Every time I lock out, my shoulders come forward. What should I do?
Don't lock out.
There you go.
And that's the thing. I don't know if it's a desire for completeness or what it is, but it's hard to break a lot of people's habit of doing a bench press and coming all the way up to where their elbows are completely locked out and it's as high as they can get it. And I think it's the idea of I want to do the complete rep, right? Mm-hmm. Which is a good attitude to have. But if you understand what that's doing, the lockout of the elbows a lot of times is what forces the shoulders to come up. Now, if you do that, your shoulders are unlocked, all your pressure's on your shoulders. And if you do another rep, now your shoulders aren't back and it's going to be all in the shoulders. We're going to risk injury. We're going to risk pain. So what you can do to avoid that, it's just about an inch, but stop about an inch before you lock out your arms. And what that's going to do is allow you to keep your shoulder blades pinched back, and you won't have the problem of your shoulders cheating up. One thing you can do to help with that is when you get to the bottom of your bench press and you go to push it up, you do want to push it up quickly. You want to apply a lot of force to the bar and push up, but you don't want to continue that momentum into the top of the bench press. Because mm-hmm. if I'm pushing the bar up and I'm pushing up really fast and it's going fast, and I get to the top and boom, it automatically is going to lock me out because the bar's moving very quickly.
Right.
So what I would do to avoid that is I would push hard out of the bottom, but once you get about halfway up, start slowing that momentum down and just kind of let the bar naturally kind of come up that last little bit, and it slowly eases into the position where you're about an inch from lockout, and then you can proceed forward with your next rep.
Yeah. Well, sometimes, like when you're setting the height on your rack, you never set it to where your arms are completely straight.
But
you
no.
have to. Yeah. Uh-huh. So that's usually, you know, because you should be able to rack it with your elbows slightly bent.
Well, you have to set it to where mm-hmm. it's a couple inches below full lockout, because If not, then you're going to have to full lockout in order to get the bar off the rack.
Right.
And if you have to do a full lockout to unrack the bar, then you're already in bad position. And so none of your reps are going to be in good position because you unlocked your shoulders before you even started.
Yes. Beautiful. Good answer. All right. I want to squat heavy. What modalities, reps, rest periods should I do to accomplish a heavy squat?
Getting to where you can squat heavy? Mm-hmm. You mean like, say they squat 135 and they want to squat 315?
Yeah.
What is their process to get there?
Yeah.
Well, first I would tell you, it's like, how do you get good at driving a car? You drive a car.
Right.
So if you want to get good at squatting and you want to be able to squat heavier, you're going to have to squat. Now, with that said, there are other modalities, like you said, that are going to be beneficial. But we are going to put squats at the base of our leg workouts every week at first. So you're going to get warmed up. You want your legs to be nice and warm, but then you're going to squat and do your squats while you have the most energy and the most strength left in your legs. Are you talking about somebody who they are going for a max squat, or they're wanting to just squat more weight for higher reps?
I think you could kind of discuss both, because I hear people that they want to squat 400 pounds, right?
Like, and for a max.
For a max. And then I hear people that they just want to squat heavier, right?
Well, there's a difference here. So if you want to squat for a max, a one rep max, then you need to get very efficient at squatting. Because if you're going to do something for one rep at a really high weight, you have to be able to move that bar really efficiently and do that movement really efficiently. Because that's an extreme amount of weight on your back. It's going to be more form-based than it is going to be strength-based. Now, if you're wanting to just increase your weight for your set of 10 on squats, it's going to be a little bit more strength-based. You still want to improve your form, but you just need to get stronger generally. So for the max, you're going to want to start training at heavier weights and lower reps. Sets of 5, sets of 3, even practice some 1 reps. And you want to do some of those every week. You can alternate 5s, 3s, do a few singles, and then go back through that rotation every week. 3 or 4 really heavy sets. And what that's going to do, by squatting a heavy weight, let's say that I squat 300 pounds on 1 week. What is happening when I do that squat? My body, and let's say I've never done it before. Mm-hmm. This is the first time I ever squatted 300 pounds, and I successfully squat it with good form. What's going to happen to my body? My body is going to think, okay, he just squatted 300. Now, our bodies don't think the way we think. Because we think, oh, I want to squat 300. Well, our body assumes, well, if he just squatted 300, he must have to squat 300. Or we need to be able to squat 300. So the body's going to then begin to adjust. And it's going to strength, you know, it's why you get sore, right? Mm-hmm. You broke down parts of the body, and then it's going to build them back. And when you're not sore anymore, it's built back, it's recovered. But it's going to break parts of the body down that it needs to build stronger in order to do that lift more frequently. So that's why when you go back the next week or 2 weeks later, you go to do 300, and you're like, oh, it's easier than it was the first time. And then every time after that, it gets easier and easier. So your body builds up the ability to lift heavier and heavier weights the more heavy weights that you lift. So lift heavy to lift heavy, if that makes sense.
Mm-hmm.
Now, if you're just wanting to be able to squat a higher weight for a large amount of reps, like a 10, 15 reps, something like that, and you're just looking for increase in strength, that's just a general increase in strength, right? If there's a guy who squats 135 pounds for 10 reps, and he wants to squat 225 pounds for 10 reps, not saying I would do this, but I could completely remove him from squats for probably 2 to 3 months, depending on the client. And I bet I could put him back on squats in 2 or 3 months later, and he could do the 225 for 10, even though he hasn't done a squat since.
Hmm.
Not that I would necessarily do that. I would keep squats as a part of his workout, but they would not be the core central focus. I would keep a lot more leg strengthening exercises in to just get his legs with the sheer size and strength that they need in order to do that.
Right.
I would focus on a lot more leg presses, RDLs, leg extensions, leg curls, things that are going to put a lot of mass on the legs, a lot of muscle on the legs. And then he's going to be able to have a better time doing at the higher reps. Now, another thing we're going to do is we're going to do all of our exercises for probably about 10 to 12, maybe upwards of 15 reps. So your leg presses, your RDLs, things like that are all going to be 3 or 4 sets, 10 to 15 reps. And we're going to push very close to failure on all those exercises. And what that is going to do is promote the highest amount of growth in the leg muscles. The more we grow the leg muscles, the easier it's going to be to move weight for higher reps.
You mean all the other modalities?
Yes, yeah. The other modalities.
Okay.
So that's both for you there.
Okay.
The max out and the higher reps.
This is kind of a two-part question, and I'll give you both questions. What should someone consider on foot placement when squatting? Should I squat with my more of an open stance and toes out, or more closed stance and toes straight?
That usually is a case-by-case basis. Mm-hmm. It's really hard for me to comment on that as sort of a blank slate or sort of without going in with any knowledge.
Mm-hmm.
Typically, whenever I adjust people's feet position on a squat, it boils down to what am I seeing whenever I watch them squat.
Right.
And then I know how to adjust from there, but I won't necessarily know from just a blank slate like how you should put your feet, because everybody's built differently. Different leg lengths and different things that change their stance. A general rule I give, if somebody is like a brand newbie and I am wanting them to do a squat for the first time, what am I going to tell them? I'm going to tell them to put their feet shoulder width apart, and I'm going to tell them to point their toes just slightly outward, and that's going to be their foot placement. Now, from there, we can adjust.
Right.
Some people do better with wider stance. Some people do better with narrower stance. I will say, if you're somebody who has a lot of knee cave on your squats, which means you go down and your knees collapse inward, then I am going to narrow your stance a little bit, because that's going to put a little more pressure or a little more of the resistance on the hip abductors, the outsides of your hips, instead of the insides of your hips on the hip adductors on the groin muscle. Because if the knees are caving in, that means you have weak hip adductors, groin muscles, and that's very common.
Mm-hmm. Very common.
So that's what I would say. And same thing with pointing the toes outward. I would probably, this is what I find, just from experience, no study or really reason behind it, but men tend to do better with a little more of an outward point on their toes, and women tend to do better a little more straight ahead.
Mm-hmm.
I don't really know why, but
yeah, my experience has always been, I've seen people that do narrow stance, squat looks great. No, I mean, there's no knee action. You know, they can go all the way to the bottom, all the way up. They're not coming up on their toes. Their femurs aren't that long, so it's not that bad to do toes forward. No correction needed. And then I've seen people do the exact same stance. Knees are caving, you know, coming up on their toes. Terrible getting out of the bottom. So sometimes I've found success on opening up kind of that wide stance, wider, and toes pointed just slightly out. If either case, either the wide or the narrow, sometimes I will have them press on the outsides of their feet, and literally 95% of the time that fixes the problem.
it does fix the problem 95% of the time, because you cannot do a squat if you're pushing through the outsides of your feet on the squat. You cannot have knee cave.
Right.
However,
it weakens.
Sometimes you can't even do the weight then that you were
right.
doing.
It weakens you.
So you do have to back off on the weight. But that is a 100% form fixer for knee cave on the squats. You're just gonna have to adjust the weight down
right.
to the weight
exactly.
where it's still the client is still able to complete the exercise.
Great advice. Okay. When considering, or I guess I'd say, what do you consider aids in lifting?
Aids.
Something that helps you lift.
Well, I guess, as like an altruist, I would say anything other than your body.
Okay.
Is an aid. You're suggesting like a belt or a knee wrap or...
Knee wraps,
wrist wraps.
Compressions.
Yeah, I mean, everything is an aid.
Yeah.
If there's anything that you're doing specifically only when you lift, like if you don't walk around wearing a weightlifting belt 24 hours a day, then and you're only doing it when you're lifting, then yeah, that's an aid.
Right.
Why else are you doing it? With that said, that doesn't mean that those things should never be used.
Right.
Because they absolutely have their place and their purpose. But yes, they are aids.
Yeah. And we usually use aids for safety.
Yes, safety is a big factor. I would specifically say joint safety
mm-hmm.
most of the time.
Right.
Or back safety when it comes to a lifting belt. The vulnerable parts of our body, it's not worth getting injured, right? If you are trying to, you know, set a raw record, which raw means you're not using most of those aids, then yeah, you have no choice but to do it and follow those guidelines. But if you're just somebody who's in the gym trying to stay healthy and you want to protect your joints, but you still want to lift a decently high amount of weight,
right.
Some of those things can be integral in protecting those joints.
Right. Yeah. Well, I lift bench raw, but they allow wrist wraps. Right. And my right wrist has been giving me problems for several months now. Doesn't really stop me from lifting, but I feel it. So when I get over, you know, 300 plus pounds, that's when I put that wrist wrap on, because I just don't want it to give on me.
The only thing I will say as an added comment on that is, if you are somebody trying to lift a lot of weight on whatever exercise it might be, don't get in the habit of using an aid to make a new PR or to reach a next level, right? Because if I go to, like, if you went out and you said, well, I want to bench a lot of weight, so you're doing good and you add your wrist wraps and that helps you a little bit, so then you want to add, you know, elbow wraps, or you want to get even stronger wrist wraps, and then you want to get a bench shirt, and then you want to, you know, and mm-hmm. next thing you know, you just keep piling on all these aids, and then, oh great, I can bench 600 pounds now, but you're using all these aids.
And that was my next question, is that there seems to be a point to where it doesn't seem like you're really lifting anymore.
Yes. And you have to find that point. It's just like everything else in life. It's a balance.
Right.
I'm not going to sit here and tell you you can't use a single thing. You got to go, like, lift naked so that you don't have any assistance. You know, it's right. like the powerlifting federation you lifted in. You can't wear underwear that has any leg on it. You have to wear, like, tidy whities.
Right.
That's mandatory because they're afraid that you're going to wear really tight underwear down your legs and it's going to give you a slight advantage.
Right.
You know, like, that's not – it's not that important. But at the same time, you can't use every aid available known to man and then just not really do anything with your actual muscles.
Exactly, exactly.
And everyone, you know, there's got to be some logic in where that line is.
Yeah.
You kind of know it when you see it, type of thing. Anyone who's watching equipped powerlifting meet, and yeah, the dude's got these wraps on his wrists and wraps on his elbows and shirts that he can't, bench shirts that he can't even move in. They're so tight and wearing all this stuff and looks almost robotic. They're wearing so much stuff. And then they like move 1,000 pounds, 2 inches, and then re-rack it. And it's like, okay, well, like everyone knows that that's BS. Even the guys doing it. Right?
Yeah.
Now they're getting a ego stroke out of it because they lifted 1,000 pounds, but even they know it's mostly BS.
That's why I respect Julius Maddox raw, you know, lifting 750 for three. I mean, it's just insane numbers. And then, you know, these guys that are lifting the clip like 1,000 pounds, that tells you how much the equipment will do for you.
Mm-hmm.
A lot.
Oh yeah, they have equipment out there that can make a big difference.
Okay, next question. I want to get bigger. All my buddies are taking Tren or some other forms of anabolics. Should I join them? What are the pros and cons?
Well, if they're getting big on Tren, then maybe you should just take more Tren than they do. Just kidding. That's
all right. Okay.
Don't clip that. Yeah, this is a question that is common among younger males,
mm-hmm,
most of the time. Sometimes you see it in a little bit older males, but it's easier, right, with the help. We talked about aids just you know, the last question. That is an aid.
Big aid.
Anabolics are a big aid. And I would treat them similar to how I treat the physical aids, the things that you wear, which is you don't want to go over the top. 100% you don't want to go over the top. Now, I choose, because it's my own opinion, to abstain completely from any anabolics, Tren, any of those, any testosterone, any type of steroids. But you definitely don't want to take it to an excessive level, because those guys out there that are taking the Tren and the steroids and they're juicing full to extreme levels at a young age, they're going to get really big and they're going to be jacked and red and have a six pack and have huge arms and all that. But by having such high levels of testosterone in their body for a prolonged period of time, they're doing some significant and usually irreversible damage.
Right.
That's going to affect them a lot in the long term. So I guess there's my opinion from a fitness and health standpoint, and then there's my opinion from a guy who's kind of been in that boat, that sees everybody around him that's taking those things and seeing really amazing results, and, you know, that had to fight off that urge myself. And from a fitness standpoint, the guy that wants to get big, you know, I would talk about the realities of the situation. Yes, these things, if you take them, will help you get bigger quicker. You can get there slower if you do it naturally without any anabolics.
Mm-hmm.
And you may not be able to reach as high of a potential. You can still get really big and really strong, but you're not going to get to as high a potential as somebody who takes anabolics. You know, your testosterone levels need to be in a certain range in order for you to be healthy for the long term. The more that you push those up in the short term, the more you're going to sacrifice your long-term health.
Right.
And that's the gist of it from a fitness standpoint. But from more of a human-to-human standpoint, I would ask the young person what they're looking to get out of their fitness, because I think a lot of times anabolics is sort of a mutilation of what the purpose of fitness is.
It's a great question, great statement. Yeah,
the purpose of fitness is not to be as big as possible or as strong as possible or as lean as possible. The purpose of fitness is you against yourself. And it's you doing the best you can with what you've got. You want to be healthy. You want to be able to be active. You want to feel good. You want to live for a long time. All of these things are the whole point. You challenge yourself. When you lift a weight that you haven't lifted before, or you accomplish an athletic feat that you haven't lifted before, you know that you got there because you worked at it. You put in the work, you worked hard, and it feels good. When you get there because of anabolics or any other aid, it doesn't feel the same. You get there and you know, okay, I got there because I cheated, because I took this thing. And then you only want to do more because you're chasing that feeling of accomplishment, and you don't get it when you're using those things.
Right.
And so then you just want to keep going and keep chasing it. And that's why you see a lot of these guys that take anabolics, well, they start off small. They just took a, you know, one round of, you know, something pretty basic. And then all of a sudden, 5 years later, they're taking so many different anabolics. They're juiced to the gills. They're, you know, swelled up, looking unnaturally freakish.
Mm-hmm.
They're all red. You know, their skin looks like a fire truck.
Right, right.
And then their organs are swelled up and unhealthy, and their eyes are yellow from the liver damage, and that, you know, they're going to die at 40.
Yeah.
And it's a dangerous, slippery slope that you could end up on if you choose to take that path. And the easiest way to make sure you don't end up there is just to don't ever start.
Wow. That's a clip right there. That's really good. You know, I think one of the things that makes me think about is, like, I know a few people that are on anabolics, and I've put in a lot of hard work. Both of us have done some things naturally that are, I'd say, significant, right? That took hours and hours and hours in the gym that were earned. And both of us did that without any type of anabolics. And I know people that are on anabolics trying to reach the goals that we reached and didn't reach it. So, guys, you can reach some significance in strength levels. You'll never look like, you know, Arnold Schwarzenegger being natural, but is that really fitness? That's what you have to ask yourself.
And is that really your goal?
Yeah.
And where you want to be? Because I would say most people know that's not their true goal. Now, I will say this before we move on. I specifically was gearing that towards younger people and people who are desiring to take it to an excessive level. Because I will say, you know, just a pure, like, testosterone, TRT, that's a little bit different, you know. When you get a little bit older, you get into your 60s, your 70s, I do believe there are a lot of ways, and we've talked about them on this podcast with one of our guests, Brian Keller, who's been on before, talked about natural ways to increase your testosterone.
Yeah.
Because your testosterone, especially as an aging male, needs to be in the normal range, the acceptable range, the average range that a healthy male is in. And if it's not, and you're significantly struggling to get it there, and you're an older male who's past childbearing age, and you're not, you're just doing it to feel better. You're doing it to get your a little bit of your vitality back. And you're just taking your testosterone from maybe, you know, 200 to 600. Something very reasonable. That, I think, is absolutely okay.
Well, ironically, my next question is testosterone therapy steroids.
Oh, so I kind of jumped the gun a little bit.
Yeah, you did.
By definition, yes, but I'm not going to look at it the same way as somebody who's taking drugs to take themselves to a level that is far beyond what they could naturally get to, instead of somebody who is just replacing hormones that should be in their body but aren't for one reason or another. I do draw a very distinct difference there.
Right.
Because seriously, if you get your testosterone tested and it's 800 and you want to take steroids because you want to get super, super big, unnaturally big and you start taking a bunch of, you take 1,000 cc's of test a week, you know, and your testosterone shoots up to 1,500, like, that ain't the same thing as you have a testosterone of 200 and you get put on a low dose of TRT and it raises it up to 600, which is, you know, a lot closer to where it should be.
Right.
There's a big difference between those two things, in my opinion.
Yeah.
And it's pretty clear, you know, who's on it for what in that case. Because I don't want anyone to, I do want everybody, and I'm not in this boat yet, still at 26 years old, but, you know, when I get to that boat in my 60s or 70s, I'm going to try everything I can to naturally increase my testosterone and keep it in the normal range and feel good and feel vital even at that age.
Right.
But if for some reason I'm really, really struggling to do that, at that point, yes, I would be okay with taking some TRT to get myself into what is a normal range, help me feel better, get some vitality back, and just enjoy those years of my life more.
Right, right. And that's your current, you're kind of touching on where I'm at. It's like I'm trying to get in the gym 6 days a week to keep my testosterone higher, right? Activity every day. And like I said, I've noticed when I don't get 6 days a week and I only do three, I'm more sluggish. I'm more tired. When I get that activity in every day, I'm more upbeat. I'm ready to go. I can get up easier. So activity every day is important, especially as you get older.
Yeah.
All right. I have two questions left. I work out all the time. How come I'm not getting any stronger?
Well, this is sort of some investigative work needs to take place now. Because I can tell you what it likely will be, but there are many different things that this could be. The first thing I'm going to look at, though, if you're telling me you work out all the time, as in you work out every day and you're not getting any stronger, I'm going to assume that you know in order to get stronger, you have to do resistance training. But that's one possibility. If you're not resistance training and you're only doing cardiovascular exercise, you're not going to get stronger, right? So that would be the first thing to look at, but that's usually not the case. The second thing, there'd be then two other things I would go to. The first would be the form on their exercise. So if they're resistance training and they're wanting to get stronger, say they want their bench press to be higher and it's not going up, we need to look at their form because their form might be bad. And if their form is bad, that could delay progression. So I'm going to check their form and say, you're either good or you're not. Right? You're either doing it right or you're not. If you're doing it right and your form is great, we're just going to leave you be there. If not, we need to adjust the form, correct the form, and usually that is going to help them break through that plateau. It's not going to happen instantaneously, but as they fix the form, they may take a small step back in what they can lift, but by fixing the form and setting those new habits, they then take off and they see a duration of time where their strength increases consistently.
Right.
But the most common reason why someone would not be getting stronger when they work out all the time is they are in a calorie deficit.
Mm.
They aren't eating enough and not eating enough of what they should be eating. Most commonly, if it's a nutritional issue, it is somebody who comes in and works out every day, hour and a half, 2 hours a day, and they go home and they barely eat anything. They eat like, oh, I had a bowl of oatmeal for breakfast and then a salad for lunch and then I skip dinner. You're not going to get any stronger.
No.
Never get any stronger. You're not having near enough protein to get strong. And it's fixing people's diets, understanding how much protein to get strong just to maintain strength. You know, we're talking about if you're an in-shape individual, you need at least 1.5 grams of protein per pound of body weight per day. That's a bare minimum just to maintain what you've got. If you want to get stronger, you need to go, or sorry, I should say 1 gram. Okay. 1 gram. Sorry, 1.5.
Yeah, I was sitting there going, man, I've been telling everyone wrong.
I was thinking kilograms there for a second.
Yeah.
So in pounds, you want to go minimum of 0.8 grams per pound. Now, if you are wanting to get stronger, you need to go 1 or beyond 1 gram per pound of body weight. So if some dude's 160 pounds and he's trying to get stronger and he's like, man, I work out every day. Why am I not getting stronger? My form's good. And, you know, I'm doing the right exercises and everything. Hey, how much protein are you eating? Right. And a lot of times it's 100 grams.
Mm-hmm.
And it's like, well, dude, that's why
your
body doesn't have anything to build with. Think about protein as the building blocks for muscles. It's kind of like if you want to build a house, but you have no lumber, how are you ever going to build a house?
Right.
You're not.
Right.
Because that's the building blocks that you use to build the house. You have to get the lumber and the sticks to put together. It's the same thing when it comes to muscles. The protein is the building blocks of the muscles. And if you don't have the protein, your body can't build anything. It's like, cool, you worked out and you broke this muscle down and now it's ready to get built back, but we don't have anything to build it back with.
Yeah.
So a lot of times it's going to be a nutritional deficiency. We are going to make sure they're eating enough protein. At least, like I said, if you're looking to put on muscle, I would say at least 1.2 grams per pound of body weight. And I would not be hesitant to go above and beyond that, especially if they are working out every day intensely and if they're a younger individual with a higher metabolism. And then I would also take a look at just the overall calories that they're eating. If they're trying to get bigger, get stronger, then I'm not as picky on where the other calories come from between carbs and fats, but we need to make sure that they're there and we need to make sure they're in a calorie surplus, which we've talked about that before. You can kind of do a calculation, not that the calculation is super exact, but you can find a calculator that will help you find your BMR, which is your basal metabolic rate. And then you can add in calories for your activity level that you do every day. You know, if you burn, you know, say your BMR calculation is 2000 and then you work out and burn 500 calories per day at the gym, that's 2500. Now we need to throw in a surplus so that you can get stronger.
Mm-hmm.
That surplus is probably going to be at a minimum of 500. And so that takes you up to 3000 right there, 3000 or beyond.
Right.
So that's kind of how I would look at it for somebody. And they could, you know, they want that to be filled with quality foods, but, you know, between
right.
carbs and fats, kind of however they prefer.
Okay. All right. Well, this is the last one. How come I'm not getting bigger?
I would say the how come I'm not getting bigger is going to be very similar to the reasons that I just gave for not getting stronger, except it's going to be even more prevalent on the side of the nutrition. The cause is more likely to be nutrition.
Yeah.
With the not getting stronger, it's like, well, it's a decent chance it could be form. It's a decent chance it could be what exercises you're doing. But it's probably nutrition. But I would say on why am I not getting bigger, it's almost certainly nutrition. And the reason is, just like I said, the calories are what build body mass. And so which law is it? One of Newton's laws, matter can neither be created nor destroyed. I think that's the first law of thermodynamics.
Mm-hmm.
Your body can't create matter out of thin air. What you put in is what you get out. So if you're
right.
putting a lot of matter into your body, it can, there's a lot of matter there for it to create size with. But if you're not putting it in, you can't get it back out.
Would rep counts and time in between reps make a difference between strength and size?
Yes. Now we're getting down to a little more specifics, which I think is good. But though, like, I would tackle the high level stuff first. Mm-hmm. But if all that's dialed in, you can make some minor differences based on rep counts. Absolutely. And what I would tell people is, if you're going for size, like you want a muscle to grow, you don't really care about how strong it is, but you just want it to grow. You want to every set be doing minimum of 8 reps, more likely 10 or 12 reps. And you need to be doing 3 or 4 sets, and all of those sets need to be pushing the muscle close to failure, if not to failure, on the last set or two.
Right.
Now, for strength, if you're talking about strength being the ability to move a heavier weight through a certain range of motion, and that's all you're concerned about, that's when we go back to like your question on squatting a lot of weight earlier, when we talked about a lower rep range. You want to do a heavy weight. Heavy weights help you lift heavy weights. A heavy weight for somewhere between 1 and 5 reps on most of your sets. And practice a heavy weight for a smaller number of reps with really good form. So okay. I would say that would be the difference in what I would tell people. Yes, if you have somebody who's struggling to, say they've plateaued on their strength and they are doing 15 reps with every set, I would say, but we need to start backing the numbers off a little bit. 5 rep sets, even 8 rep sets are better than 15. Likewise, if somebody is looking to get bigger muscles and they've plateaued on their size, but their nutrition is there, then I would say we need to make sure that the reps are high enough.
Mm-hmm.
Say they're doing 5 reps for every set. They're probably getting a lot stronger, but they may not be putting on quite the size that they
right.
want to put on. And that's kind of the difference there.
That's why you see some guys that might not be as big but are stronger than guys that are swelled up and they're strong but not as strong.
But see, I think these are very important, what you just brought up there. But at the same time, it pales in comparison to the nutrition, the importance
Absolutely.
Of the nutrition. Because, yeah, these are minor details. We can tweak rep ranges and things and we can get some results out of it. But, you know, if you're eating in a calorie surplus and you're eating quality foods and you're lifting heavy things, you're going to get bigger and stronger, right? If you're eating in a calorie surplus and you're just simply not eating near, or a calorie deficit, and you're not eating near enough calories as your body needs to break even, you're going to lose weight. You're going to lose body fat and muscle mass, even if you're working out.
Right.
And that's most of the cases.
Yes. Very good. Well, Parker, that is all my questions.
No more questions?
No. The only, I agreed with 100% of that until you told me 1.5. But then I realized you corrected yourself. So
100%. Well, that's a pretty high mark.
Well, we are like-minded. So.
It's not like we haven't spent a lot of time together talking about all these things already.
Yeah, exactly.
Yeah, and I think that just goes to show, to me, it kind of, we bounce a lot of ideas off each other. Hey, what do you think about this? Or I saw this, you know, did you see that? What's your take on it? And that helps us. We know each other has a not only a high intelligence level in the field of health and fitness, but also just a high aptitude level to be able to learn new things. And so by bouncing stuff off of each other and talking to each other, it's kind of like iron sharpening iron. Right?
Exactly.
We both become better trainers because of it. Now, as a result, we've ended up with very similar opinions on all things mm-hmm. health and fitness, but that's because we have done the research and done the work to truly figure out what is right and what is correct.
And it's not that we've done the research, we've seen the results.
Yes.
You know, that's you had a famous quote to me once, is like, I've seen what works in the gym, right? And it absolutely works. And we've seen it client after client after client. And it's the way I approach my nutrition when I provide it. It's the way I approach everything you stated about, you know, how you approach form and lifts and all that is what we've seen work.
Yeah, I remember when you were first a beginner trainer and you were still going through the process of learning, you were researching constantly, you know, and you would bring stuff to me. Hey, I saw this person said this, or I saw this.
Mm-hmm.
And that's what I always tell you. I'd be like, well, sometimes I would agree, but sometimes I'd be like, you know what? I don't agree with that. And here's why, because as my last 3 years as a trainer, here's what I've tried this with people. I've tried that with people. I've tried this with myself. I've tried that with myself. And this is what worked. Mm-hmm. So that's what I do.
Yeah.
Right. There's nothing to teach you like experience.
Yeah, absolutely. You know, and if you've found that niche of how to communicate a approach style, nutritional type approach, and you could communicate it and people listen and they get results and they're healthy, that's probably a testament that you're doing the right thing.
Yeah, because I would say along with the idea of what works in the gym, it would also be what works for the clients. Because a lot of times, too, you can see things on social media and researchers and people that are probably correct in what they're saying, but what they're suggesting is not practical.
Yes.
Right? Well, you should be doing it this way and that way. And, well, does that work for the average person? You know, does that work for the person that has got a spouse and kids and a full-time job and, you know, is busy? Does it work for them? And a lot of times the answer with some of these things is no, it doesn't work for them. We need to find a practical solution. And that's one of the things that actually being in it every day and seeing hundreds of different clients come through the door that we've had to help, we continue to see situations we haven't seen before. And we have to think to ourselves, okay, given this person's barrier, how can we still figure out how to get them results? Mm-hmm. Because that's our job.
Mm-hmm.
Oh, okay. You know, we bring up the nurse example a lot. Okay, you're a nurse. You're not going to quit your job, right? You're not going to change jobs. You're going to be working 12-hour shifts overnight, and you're going to be on your feet the whole time. You're not maybe going to get the meals in exactly how we plan, how we would ideally like you to, but we still have to find a solution for you that will work, that you can be in shape and be healthy. And we do that instead of just sitting behind a screen like some of these people that are famous in the fitness world on YouTube or Instagram that say, well, you should do it this way, and this is the only way to do it. Well, all that does is make people quit.
Yeah.
Because they go, oh, well, I can't do that. That doesn't fit with my life. Then I just will give up because I guess I can't do it. And that's what I want. That's a message I definitely want people to get, is that it doesn't matter your situation. It doesn't matter your barriers. You can be healthy. You can be in shape. Don't think that these barriers are going to prevent you, because they won't. You can do it. It may take some help, but we're here to help.
Yes. Yeah. And I think that's the key of a great trainer, is they give them practical, pragmatic approaches to achieve the goals that we need them to achieve. And we also give them the grace to fail, right? And so I always tell my people, I say, listen, if you have a bad week, don't beat yourself up. You know, just know I'll be talking to you every week. How's the nutrition going? You know, how are the numbers going? And this, me talking to them and ask them every week, they start to follow it, right? But I'm not pounding them over the head and say, you big idiot, why'd you eat that big piece of chocolate cake? You know, it's done, let's move on. You know, they know the consequence, right? We all do. We all kind of relativize when we eat something that's not great for you.
I've never had a client walk in the door who's sat down and when I tell them that they can't eat chocolate cake, or that they shouldn't eat chocolate cake, it's unhealthy for them, they are shocked. What? I didn't know that was unhealthy. Are you serious?
Right.
You know, no, people know, you know, they have an idea. They should be exercising. They know kind of what things they should be eating. Maybe not down to the minute detail, but they have a general idea.
Yeah. Yeah. Well, that was a good show.
Yep. That was episode number 33.
Yeah.
Correct?
So yeah, 33
episodes. And we're just going to keep rolling on it, guys. Keep coming at you every week, every Saturday with a new episode. Had fun doing it. I know we were hoping for a couple of guests this week. I will continue to tease that because I do think at some point we will have a couple of special guests on. But
they are special, and I know who they are. Hopefully we'll have them on soon, or as we get more settled into this new environment where we're recording on Anytime Fitness's gym floor. We're hoping as we get closer to 2025, we're starting to get a regular batch of guests. So be patient with us, and we're going to keep driving, trying to provide you the healthy advice that you need to get through your life.
Yep. Couldn't have said it better. Thanks for listening, guys. We appreciate having you, and we'll be back at you next week with another episode.
Sounds good. Bye-bye.
Hey, look at you. You've completed another milestone by finishing this episode of Loading the Bar. Your future self thanks you profusely. Loading the Bar is podcasted from Lee Summit, Missouri. Email us at cpt.kansascity@gmail.com. Forge ahead and share your progress. And we'll see you back here for another episode of Loading the Bar.